Hopefully the lack of oxygen in my past career won't affect my speaking ability. I've got some slides I'll run through. I'm going to go fairly quick. I want to concentrate on certain areas, and I'll slow down where those areas are. And I've got one video clip that doesn't work well, so I'm going to have to jump out of the presentation short and jump back into it. And as Bob said, I'm going to discuss Global Hawk in relationship to its application, Homeland Security, and as a communications or information relay platform. So you'll see a lot of discussion about intelligence collection, as you mentioned, but think of it in terms of the exact same application of this technology. How it's used on the battlefield is exactly how you'd use it in any other scenario or situation, particularly like a Katrina. When we first deployed, getting ready for the war in Afghanistan, my boss, General Beeler, said, "What do you think they're going to want?" Because we were in charge of the ISR systems. And I said, "I think they're going to want to see everything, hear everything, know everything all the time, every place." And he goes, No. What do they really want? What will the commanders want?" And I said, "They want to see everything, hear everything, know everything, every place all the time." And so he said, "How do we plan for that?" Well, you take the toys that you have and you go to war with it. So that to know everything all the time, every place, is also applicable in a Homeland Security type scenario. You want to know what's going on. It's persistent surveillance or persistent communications relay or persistent engagement in whatever the activity is. So whether it's wartime or whether it's a humanitarian relief operation, persistence is the key. There has to be a vehicle or a system in place to provide that uninterrupted communications and information relay. Back in the days, there's a little hand there. Anyway, back in the days of historical operations, U-2s and SR-71s, they were developed with the eye of penetration to be able to get into areas of denied access. That was their original intent. The SR went by the wayside because of cost, which things happen, a great capability. The U-2 remained because it offered persistence. But that persistence was, again, tied to either the human bladder, and they solved that problem, or human endurance in terms of sleep, which limited us to a certain mission length. So the next logical solution to gain that type of information gathering denied access, we moved to satellites and satellite systems. That was all about gaining access to denied territories. You can use satellites, and they are ideal for that, and they could be ideal for persistence, except they are prisons of their orbits, and it would be extremely costly to provide persistent see everything, know everything, hear everything all the time, every place around the globe to use satellites alone in that architecture. But certainly you could do it, but you'd have to have hundreds, if not thousands, of satellites to perform that job. So the real logical solution is what brought about the birth of a Global Hawk type system, a high altitude, long endurance system. Take the benefits or the attributes of all those other capabilities and roll it up into an unmanned system. So I have the benefit of high altitude, of flexibility, and I'm not limited by the human inside the cockpit. This is just a representation here. That's the Global Hawk vehicle. Final version of it is 130-foot wingspan, carries 3,000 pounds of payload. You have a launch and recovery element, which is it coexists where the plane exists in terms of launching and recovering. But the business end is this mission control element. That's where the information or the imagery or whatever the data is that you're gathering comes down to, and then it is distributed from that point, just to give you an idea of what it looks like. The way the Air Force has designed the program is it's in several blocks of capability. We're currently using this ACTD, Advanced Concept Technology Demonstrator. That's what's over in the war right now flying. We have one asset in theater. It's been over there for quite some time, and it's operating. We are currently just finishing production on the RQ-4A, which is a 2,000-pound payload bird. That's significant in that 2,000 pounds of payload will generally scarf up all the current sensors that you'd want to carry in terms of the capability you'd want to carry on board, plus some communications relay equipment. The significant jump, though, from the RQ-4A to the RQ-4B is 3,000 pounds of payload, but, and here's the biggest piece of it, it's an open system architecture. So you invent a sensor or a communications package or some sort of information management system, I can plug it into my Global Hawk and fly it at 60,000 feet. It's the quest to get to where we are with computers in terms of things like you know, plug and play type of activity to get to a platform that the platform remains solid and enduring, but the systems that you apply to it literally will plug in as you need them or as technology advances them. So quickly, I'm going to cover why did we move to this high altitude structure and some of the benefits of that. At high altitude, you're above the weather, 60,000 feet. Most things exist below about 50,000 feet. I've been over several hurricanes in a U-2, and although it's relatively calm air, it's really scary when you look down. So I just never would look down. You're also above all of the other air traffic in the area. That's key and critical, particularly in an arena that you're talking about civil air traffic or high civil air traffic concentrations. You also have a 300-mile horizon, visible horizon, at 60,000 feet. So if I'm going to take images or collect information or do communications relay, I now can communicate about a 600-mile range. And if it's air-to-air, I can actually extend that out to about 1,400 miles. So there's a great deal of distance involved that I can now shrink down to whatever that one platform can cover. And not necessarily in an urban environment, possibly at the early stages of Katrina, though, high altitude does offer you some protection from surface-to-air missiles. Not that anyone had any, but there was apparently a lot of activity on the ground. Just to quickly cover, the way the atmosphere is broken up, Global Hawk flies at about 60,000 feet. You end up in the tropopause or above any of the major activity involved with convective activity or weather. That also provides you a very stable platform for collecting information. You're not pulling a lot of G's. You're not being bounced around. It's a relatively benign environment. You're also above major winds. And there's a distinction between different types of vehicles. There's medium altitude UAVs, which are very good for proximity, close-in operations. If I'm going to launch something like a Predator, I'll use a Predator as an example, a great system to use in an area that's close to where I'm going to launch it. It'll provide me persistence in a tactical sense over spot targets. But I would never launch a Predator from Los Angeles to do something in New York because it would take so long for it to get there. One of the major culprits of that are winds. And if you take a look at what winds generally do, at altitude, winds tend to be very low, generally 15 knots or so, maybe 25 knots. So a medium altitude system you wouldn't use if you're trying to cover the entire nation. Same with a manned system such as a P-3. But in the case of a P-3, it flies at lower altitude, but you do have the ability to adjust your airspeed to maybe make up some of that range loss if you're bucking a headwind, as in that case there. And I mentioned above air traffic. At 60,000 feet, generally, the only thing you're going to run into or be worried about are other Global Hawks or U-2s. And generally speaking, the big sky theory works out, and you're not going to run into one of those guys. But you are under air traffic control at that altitude, just that you don't have to worry about civil air traffic. Here's where I got to jump out of this a second.
Exit.
And I'm showing this purely out of entertainment value. This is a moment in the life of the United States in terms of air traffic.
Wow.
This is it's hard to see right now, but the sun is setting. We're going into about midnight, and the air traffic subsides because of quiet hours and lack of air traffic. You'll see the sunrise begin. Here's Chicago, probably United, the hub, the East Coast starts to explode with air traffic, and you can actually go across the U.S. in terms of where the sun is because of everyone waking up and starting their air traffic activity. So this is all happening below 40,000 feet. This is why UAVs were not employed at Katrina, because the FAA was concerned about air traffic. And as we heard in earlier speakers, just the helicopter traffic in small areas was tremendously complicated. You can jump back into the presentation. My point with that piece is that if you've got a high altitude system, air traffic doesn't matter. You're gonna be able to move around and do what you need to do with the flexibility that you need to operate. Global Hawk, for instance, has a national COA. It's allowed to file a flight plan and fly around the United States and do whatever activities it can perform. The advantages of high speed: altitude also brings high speed. Comes along with the fact that the air is thin and the airplane thinks it's going a lot slower, but you're really going really fast. And so if I have sensors that can go out to 100 miles or 200 miles, I cover an awful lot of territory, so I can survey a great distance at a very short period of time. And this is just illustrative of the types of coverage that you can get. And of course, altitude gives you that the ability with endurance to cover those large areas with large footprint sensors. These are depicted. This is just an electro-optical example of the area covered in a single mission aircraft versus a male UAV versus a U-2. But that's just illustrative of the area covered. And I mentioned before, large payload. The 3,000-pound payload for Global Hawk, the RQ-4B, the version that we're in production for right now, we carry a full complement of sensors, intelligence sensors. And the Air Force has recently decreed that we'll carry another system on board, which is we'll call it a relay system, and I'll speak to it here in a second, and some forms of communications relay package. And again, these are, for all intents and purposes, somewhat plug-and-play. I can put a radio in and act as a surrogate relay or a surrogate satellite relay system. And the advantage, again, of that large payload is I can carry a standard set of sensors, and I can remove and replace and add whatever comes along. In fact, not too long before Hurricane Katrina, we were asked to take a look at how much radio relay capacity we could carry with the full 3,000 pounds of payload. And we've got a development of what that could be. And then we've got this system called AIA. We used to call it Airborne Imagery Architecture. We call it Advanced Information Architecture. This is simply taking the mission recorder on board a Global Hawk, replacing it with a 1.4 terabyte server. Every image, every bit of information that is taken by Global Hawk is stored on board. And then there's a little bit of Google-type software that we load into the handhelds and PDAs of our troops on the ground, and they literally, using the 802.11 protocol, reach up and pull down information directly off of Global Hawk. Works just the way our cell phones work or our PDAs work. And it's pretty ingenious, and it's extremely simple, and that's probably why it's ingenious. They take their standard field equipment with that little Google search software, works just like MapQuest. You reach up, you pull down an image, and I think I've got an example. As it's indicated here on this little box here, you get a map of the world. It says you are here. You click on it. It shows where images already exist. You touch that image just just as you would on the computer on MapQuest, and you drill down into that image. So that each time you retrieve an image, you're pulling in just what you've asked for. You don't have to survey the entire picture. A single picture downloaded to a PDA would take over 20 minutes if you did it through a standard, give me the whole picture. But it's just like MapQuest. You only want to drill down at the area that you want to see, and that's how it works. And it's not just about relaying images. You can relay any kind of information that you can store on that server. Some quick applications. We took a look at the blackout that took place on the East Coast a couple years ago. A single Global Hawk with the right comm relay package, you could have cell phone relay for first responders. You could have it up in the air within a couple of hours, providing a coverage footprint the size of the state of Montana. Again, the ability to quickly load that package, fly it, have it airborne, and provide first responders that communication link. Same thing, fighting a forest fire is an awful lot like fighting the Taliban in Tora Bora. You've got an activity, you've got troops on the ground, you're attacking the fire. You can use combinations of things like Blue Force Tracker, where you can tag the individuals, you know where they are, you can see them essentially like on a radar scope. You can tag your equipment, you can monitor the fire, you can do the communications relay back to home base camp, and you can effectively fight a fire using the same kind of systems that you use in combat. And then we built this little scenario. This is a little known fact that came out in the press not too long ago. 2 weeks before Katrina, we were asked to take a look at how would you use a Global Hawk for consequence management. And we were given a couple of examples. Take a look at some examples of things that would happen in the U.S. And I asked the question, well, what do you want me to look at? And I said, just the usual stuff. So we chose a hurricane, level 5 hurricane, hitting the Gulf Coast. And we built this scenario before Katrina, so we just relabeled the slides. But there's an effort underway with NOAA to use Global Hawk to track tropical depressions, drop sonobuoys, temperature measuring devices, and track the development of a storm. Part of this is for data collection on how storms, tropical storms, develop, and part of it is about actually watching development and doing some predictive analysis of where that particular storm might go. In all that, you can relay that information directly to the centers that need that information. Again, sorry about this being such a close parallel to Katrina, but I won't tell you about the other scenario. It's pretty ugly, and I just hope that one doesn't come to pass. But in this case, we're showing how Global Hawk can be used to track that storm, provide the updates, provide the position. And you can do this 24-hour coverage because the airplane has about 32 hours of endurance. So you can go out from Florida, you can fly out off the coast of Africa and track the storm and then swap airplanes and keep track of the system. You can do evacuation route analysis. You can provide communications relay. Again, with the sensors and the sensor footprint, you can collect that information and pass that information to first responders and those who need it. You can do what I would call tagging assets. You've got oil wells, ships at sea, all those things that are in the up-and-coming hurricane or disaster. You can get a precise geographic location and their status at the time just prior to hit. And then while the storm is hitting, you can do an analysis of what is being destroyed, how it's being affected, who might be in distress using those same sensor sets. And then you can use the system also to relay that information to prepare for the relief of the operations as soon as the storm passes. And then finally, you can use those same sensor systems to take care of the refugees, those in distress, use the infrared cameras, pull people off of rooftops, and using that little AIA system, give all the guys the PDAs and the laptops to go in and actually pull down images of where people are and get very precise coordinates as to where they might be, and provide that communications relay as well. And this just illustrates that you can do that air-to-air as well, which we've demonstrated. And my last two slides, we refer to there are strategic systems and there are tactical systems. Tactical systems are very good at what they do for small confined areas. Strategic systems are much better if you're talking about broad area or long-haul communication relay. And this just illustrates that a single Global Hawk will do the work of about 21 medium-altitude UAVs. And if you look at the manpower required to support the 21 medium-altitude UAVs, you can see there's a big cost savings if I move to the strategic platform for that type of operation. And that concludes my presentation.